Watergate, punk rock, victory in Palestine, terror on the airline, Ayatollahs in Iran, Russians in Afghanistan, real fucking salad ride, heavy metal suicide, foreign debt, homeless vet, AIDS crack, Bernie gets hypodermics on the shore, China's under martial law, rock and roll a color wars, I can't take it anymore.
We didn't start the fire, it was all we burned, it's just a world we turned.
And on into Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's what you're listening to, 96.3 FM. Again, as I said before, I'm your host, Robert Norris, or Bathroom Spear Robert, as some people call me. This is 2 hours coming at you of talk about civil rights, some music, and hopefully some call-ins from you. We're going to be talking about a number of things tonight. Hopefully we're going to get a couple of guests in the studio. Not entirely sure. We're going to be talking to one young woman who was harassed and arrested at Aptos Shopping Center on Christmas Eve. Well, actually Christmas, the afternoon before Christmas. We've talked about that case before, and the trial of her boyfriend, Brian Clark, which apparently went well. We're going to hear her story on how that came out. That should be happening soon. We're going to be doing a lot of reading. There's an anti-begging drive up in San Francisco that some of you may have looked at, may have seen, and described in the San Francisco Chronicle a couple of days ago. It's similar to our own failed real change, not spare change hoax, which the Downtown Association was trying to put over on folks a couple of years ago, so aptly exposed by one of our free radio broadcasters, Phil Free. Ah, looks like an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi. I'm calling in. Did you know anything about WAM, the Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana, having lost their 503c nonprofit status recently?
I have not heard about that. Is that in fact the case?
I did hear that from one member who is a member of that cooperative.
Wow.
And as you know, Valerie Correll's group was the first nonprofit medical marijuana organization in the state of California. And I just heard that rumor. I don't know if it's true. Maybe some of your listeners might know something about it.
Wow. I know that the Cannabis Club itself, another cannabis club, the club on, I guess it was Maple Street, closed down about a month ago, partially due to internal problems, partially due to pressures from the state and the federal government. State Governor Dan Lundgren and, of course, the Clinton-backed DEA, which has gone after cannabis clubs up and down the state. So, gosh, WAM, of course, has been a club all its own that has taken the stance of, I guess, giving away marijuana and showing people how to grow their own rather than selling it to them. And one of the criticisms against the cannabis club at Maple Street was that their prices were too pricey and things of that sort. But I guess we talked to Kate Wells, who was their attorney, the attorney for the cannabis club on Maple Street, and she said that one of the main reasons they had to close was their clientele was cut from 200 to 50 by the new danger, I guess, the paranoia that's been spreading, that unless you have every paper in order and every T crossed and every I dotted, you're going to get, hauled into court. And that was what they were afraid of, and they had to cut off a lot of patients and only had 50 left, and their base just became too small. Are you still on the line there?
I am.
Mm-hmm. Are you yourself a medical marijuana user? Or?
I'm currently a primary caregiver.
Uh-huh. Well, what does that mean for you in the current climate? Are you more apprehensive about being hassled by police? Or?
Not so far, but then... excuse me.
Yeah, well, I know that, of course, the Cannabis Club in San Francisco, led by the rebellious Dennis Perone, turned over, I guess, to other hands in order to make it easier for the club to function, given the harassment against Perone, has successfully reopened, and there's people aren't going to give up. Having voted in a statewide proposition that makes it legal for people to use medicine, I don't think they're about to, you know, tuck tail and run. I mean, people have to use this medicine or feel that it's, you know, very advantageous for them to do so, and simply because the federal authorities want to enforce prohibition prejudices, it's not working. Of course, I think it would be hard to get an argument around that here in Santa Cruz. Maybe we can get some folks calling in who think that this marijuana prohibition is a good idea, or maybe it's a good idea that these clubs close down.
Well, we had heard that a whole bunch of medical files had been seized from the San Jose club when the police came, and what were considered very private medical records of patients. And according to Ann Turner, who's one of our contacts in San Jose, she said that the San Jose Mercury News had published names and diagnoses of patients from those files that were seized by the police from the San Jose Club.
Wow.
So it's really outrageous, the attacks on medical marijuana, in light of the fact that we have had a proposition that was voted for by more people in the state of California than voted for President Clinton.
Well, I think it's also outrageous in our county for us to have to feel in fear. And I've said numerous times on this show that the minute that Tracy's deputies began seizing people's marijuana and their marijuana cards, as Deputy Fitzgerald did at the metal detector at the courthouse a year and 2 months ago, and we complained about that. I guess you also filed a complaint, as I remember. And received no response from Sheriff Mark Tracy. The complaints disappeared. The practice.
Yeah, I got a two-line reply.
Yeah, I got no reply to mine.
That was after about two more phone calls of being what exactly happened to this complaint.
I mean, and then it happened again 2 months later. The same woman, Jane Kaiser, had her, you know, again had her marijuana seized. It was. It shows, you know, a bad faith on the part of Mark Tracy and the Sheriff's Department. They know that not only has statewide medical marijuana been decriminalized or legalized, but it's also in this county, it's been the case for several more years that the declared will of the voters has been that the police keep their hands off the medicine of people who are sick and need to use it, and stop playing gangbusters and Mr. Cop. You know, stop playing Miami Vice with elderly women. This woman was 59, is 59 years old. She may be 60 now. In order to, beef up Art Danner's prosecution records and impress everybody with their fearsomeness. It's just, it's grotesque. It makes me angry. And I really feel it should make the community angry. And I feel that the community should step out and support people. You know, I mean, I know we have a no smoking in line law going the rounds, but I'd like to see a smoke out, you know, in front of a DEA's office. I mean, I'd like to see these people called out for who they are. You know, they're bullies and they're thugs, and they're essentially thieves that are stealing people's, you know, medical marijuana and stealing people's lives and health. I mean, it's incredible.
And their freedom.
Right. Well, anything else you want to add, caller?
I would like to hear if there are any of your callers that have some updates about this latest attack on WHAM. I would appreciate that they would call in.
Okay.
Thank you.
So, you heard it there. The call has been put out. If anybody knows, has any information on whether WHAM, Women and Men for Medical Marijuana, have had their... That organization has had its tax status, its nonprofit status removed. If anybody knows, give us a call here at 423-5361. That's our call-in line at Free Radio Santa Cruz. That's what you're listening to, 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz, here in Santa Cruz. And like to hear from you. Like to hear from you on this issue and other issues that we're going to be talking about on the air. We've spent some time talking about laws that oppress poor people here in Santa Cruz. We're going to be talking about policies by the city council. They're likely to oppress a lot of people, specifically the Beach Flats redevelopment or the Seaside Company sellout, as some of us call it, the mega redevelopment plan that is turning things around into the hands of developers and essentially selling out dozens of families down in the beach flats so that the city council can do its own little project down there, its own big project down there, and that Charlie Canfield and the Seaside Company can expand. That's, of course, going to be the subject of hopefully productive and significant public discussion that can have some impact on politicians debating this issue, or trying to avoid debating this issue, I should say, since the majority of the city council seems intent on ramming through the boardwalk situation, the boardwalk expansion. I'm looking over here a interesting email I got, Boardwalk Bucks versus Bikes. This is an email from the 5th, talks about an upcoming Saturday, May 16th discussion at Loudoun Nelson Center at 1 p.m. on the beach flats. That's something I've seen advertised in different places. And it reads like this. 4 years ago, before being elected, members of the current city council promised a two-way bike lane on Beach Street. 2 years ago, the same promise was made by other current city council members in their election campaigns. And now we get another promise of a proposed two-way bike lane on Beach Street, but only if we adopt the Beach South of Laurel plan. The plan does not spell out in concrete any bike flow and access issues, i.e. it only proposes the two-way bike lane on Beach Street. These are only conceptual, not formal concrete parts of the plan, unlike the 3rd Street realignment, which is very specific and is a formal part of the plan. Other bike aspects of this plan, which are only concepts and not formal parts of the plan, include a wide bike access across the trestle. The plan calls for talks with Southern Pacific to determine the feasibility of such a proposal. No timeline. B, the Laurel Street Extension bikeway, which was lost in the 1982 flood, is scheduled to be repaired. Yet, not until the third phase of the plan, 15 or 20 years from now. Why cannot we have it now without the plan so we can access the closed bike path that runs along the Riverside Bridge and connects one safely and legally with the bike path that continues up to the rail trestle and boardwalk? And C, a proposal to study linking the Wharf Beach, Westcliff, Downtown, and Chestnut bike lanes. No clear proposal, no time frame, just a study. The only concrete bike issue addressed in the plan is that there will be bike parking at the planned depot parking structure. Why would anyone park there to go to the beach? We as cyclists need and must demand our long-promised bikeways without being linked to the plan. The plan, again, this is the beach flats south of Laurel plan, offers nothing concrete to the biking public and to the quality of life for the people of Santa Cruz. It does, however, greatly expand the profit potential for the Seaside Company and a small group of business people. The plan estimates that the boardwalk expansion and other business developments it suggests will bring about a 60% increase in tourist traffic. Help us reject this plan and demand the bike lane improvements already promised to us. There will be a panel discussion about the plan on Saturday, May 16th at the Loudoun Nelson Center at 1 p.m. Check the epicenter in the Comic News for more info. There was also a Planning Commission work session Tuesday, May 12th, 6:30 to 10 in the Transit District Conference Room, which hopefully we're going to have, by the way, some discussion of. We're going to give a call to Phil Baer, this time since our phones seem to be working. If they weren't on Sunday, my apologies to you listeners who are listening in for that. We can get some real information on that. The above words are those of Neptune, a Beach Flats resident. He tells me that the plan also calls for a 250-foot-tall roller coaster higher than the San Lorenzo River cliffs. The noise from this new ride will make Seabright residents wish they had paid more attention to the Seaside Company's present maneuvering. This is Cycle America, Natural Bicycle Greenway, CycleAm at BikeRoute.com. And it's called Boardwalk Bucks versus Bike Lanes. And that's interesting. That's the first discussion I've seen about this attempt to co-opt bike users and owners by saying the only way you're going to get a bike lane is if you buy into this huge automobile increasing realignment of 3rd Street, La Bahia Hotel Project, Seaside Company expansion, the whole thing. It's really It's really quite something. So let's take a brief musical break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to a woman who is a little happier today. She's won something in court, or I should say her boyfriend has a bit of justice for a change.
Please, Mr. White House, don't send me to the poorhouse. You've taxed my pockets empty and my bills I cannot pay. Please, Mr. White House, I'm living in the doghouse. The bank just came to repossess and took my house away. Please, Mr. White House, don't send me to the jailhouse. I just want to live my life the way it's supposed to be. Please, Mr. White House, my friends are in the big house. I just want to have a home and feed my family. Please, Mr. White House, I can't afford a dollhouse, but you have many colored rooms with closet space to spare. Please, Mr. White House, tell me your house is my house. When I come to Washington, I'll move in with you there. White House, I'm living in the doghouse. The bank just came to repossess and took my house away. Please, Mr. White House, take your programs to the outhouse. Until the truth comes out of you, it's in there you can stay. Until the truth comes out of you, it's in there you can stay.
And that was our favorite, Mark Levy, Mr. White House, and it's kind of a self-explanatory song. Unfortunately, the live interview that I had scheduled with Gina Passanisi, who's Brian Clark's girlfriend, woman arrested by Deputy Thurber on the afternoon before Christmas, she has had to go out. So I'm going to hope to have her either on tape or live on the Sunday show. This show repeats, doesn't repeat actually, our second version, our next show is somewhat longer actually. It'll be on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning. It goes until 1:30. So I encourage you to tune back in then and we will pick her up at that point. Again, our call-in number for those of you who are listening with a phone and an active imagination or just some passion or even some interest in raising a question or two, it's 423-5361. Our lines are open, 423-5361. Don't be bashful. We need your voices out there. We, those of us who babble on the radio, we'll continue to babble on, and hopefully we'll be saying something worth listening to. But it's really only worth listening to, and the only way we know it's worth listening to, people who are listening to us call us and let us know that we've sparked some interest or some thought or some debate in your mind. So give us a call. Again, 423-5361. What do you think of this Beach Flats plan? Is it something that, who cares? Is it something we want to get rid of? Is it something that we maybe want to get rid of the city council members who are proposing it, so we actually have some people who are proposing productive plans instead of plans that are selling the city out to large developers and business people who really are operating concessions that will produce profits for themselves but will not allow the kind of compassionate expansion, or compassionate, if we want expansion, the compassionate kind of lifestyle that Santa Cruz, well, should be known for, and in some cases is known for. Give us a call, 423-5361. So I also spent some time on the air talking about the Citizens Police Review Board, perhaps to exhaustion, because the Citizens Police Review Board, it's a misnamed body. It's actually a little kind of fig leaf created by the city council, mainly by Scott Kennedy. He was the man who delayed it for several years and then finally let it go through or put it through, which pretty powerless to start with in many respects, but now not even using those powers it has to investigate police misconduct, most particularly police shootings. We've had 3 police shootings in, 6 months, 2 of them by our own Santa Cruz Police Department, the other one up on the hill. The 2 that have concerned us here on this station have been, of course, the Happy John Dine shooting in November and the shooting of Brian Andrus in March. Saw Brian Andrus's mother today in court. Unfortunately, we were rushing out doing the sleeping ban campaign, the initiative to overturn the sleeping and blanket bans. We've been talking a lot about that on the air, so we didn't have a lot of time to talk to Linda Andrus, and hopefully we'll be able to talk to her again and bring her to you. We've already played an interview with her about a month ago when she talked about the kind of incredible mistreatment her son suffered at the hospital and the way her son was treated, shot 4 or 5 times by police officers who broke into his house claiming domestic abuse calls. But actually, at least when we talked to one of the callers, it wasn't domestic abuse. It was just concern about more of a disturbing the peace kind of call. The officers did not invite the man to come outside, did not announce really what their business was, shoved their way into the house, alarmed the husband, Brian Andrus, by jacking up the woman, his wife, Lori Andrus, by the arms. And then when he came down the stairs, reportedly, some say he was, some say he wasn't, armed with a baseball bat, he was shot outside 4 times, even though all non-police witnesses, again, that we've talked to, say that he was nowhere within striking range of any police officer or any person when he stood out there and was shot down and then left in the mud like a dog with his face in the mud. And there was a question of whether he received proper medical treatment. Mike Rotkin claimed that video journalist Becky Johnson lied when she said that the police stripped him down in order to humiliate him. And indeed, Johnson may have been in error when she claimed that police stripped the clothes off him. It may have been the medics when they eventually arrived. But the real question, and the more important question, was why didn't he get medical attention in the 5 minutes before the medics arrived, and when the police just sit around talking instead of giving him CPR, trying to cover him with a blanket, all the things that should have been done when a man's been shot 4 times and is bleeding to death on the ground. He eventually went into critical condition at the hospital and survived, and actually I spoke to him briefly at his house before he was evicted by his landlord, who apparently blamed him and his wife for this incredible, what appears to be an incredible police over-response and a big police fuck-up. I'm a man who tries to use those kinds of words sparingly on the air because I believe they should have proper emphasis. This was a fuck-up, definitely a fuck-up. What do you think about all this? Why don't you give me a call at Free Radio Santa Cruz? Let me know, have you had problems with the police? Or am I bad-mouthing them too much? Any thoughts on this subject? 423-5361. Give me a call and we'll talk about it. Anyway, the question of police review of serious shooting incidents has been one that's really been kind of bouncing around the town. We're going to talk about that as soon as we talk to this caller.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, I couldn't resist your request for
callers. Okay. Well, this sounds like that familiar caller, Bob LaMonica.
Robert, how you doing?
All right, Bob.
Robert, why are you an activist?
Why am I an activist?
Yeah.
It's probably a genetic defect. That's my real idea here. I think if I had any sense, I would be an ice cream maker or something sensible, you know. I don't know. You know, I guess I like to bring to public attention things that I think are not being brought out, and I hope, often without good cause, that people will act on those things, and perhaps someday they will.
Well, I think it's an interesting question, because so much of the establishment seems to be designed towards sloughing off the most important issues of our time. It's actually quite shocking for me, as I get older, to witness
this seemingly endless ability to slough off things that seem to me and to others essential to honest communication, honest government, honest society.
You know, it's really true that is what happens, and I guess what the question that we have to find are the ways, the best ways to focus attention on issues so that they can't do this. I mean, you know, it's I'm a nonviolent person, but it's interesting that often it's angry, violent reactions by the population that get the most attention. I mean, you didn't get money put into the ghettos in Los Angeles until the Watts riots. You didn't get police review getting really seriously considered by cities until the Simi Valley Rodney King riots. It's often the squeaky wheel that gets the attention, and you often gotta make a real big squeak. So I don't know, you know, I'm becoming more and more of the opinion that the louder we shout, the better. And sometimes you have to break a few eggs to make an omelet. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not calling for people to start breaking windows. But on the other hand, when I see windows broken, I often understand that it's because beforehand people knocked and knocked and knocked and knocked and knocked for years, and nobody wanted to pay any attention. So.
Well, to take one issue, the sleeping ban, the ordinance, anyone that reads it, the mere fact that it provides a discretion for law enforcement to arrest someone, cite them, merely for the very human living act of sleeping, particularly when they're so down and out that they might have to resort to sleeping outdoors, I find downright despicable.
Sure.
And the fact that it can be sloughed off so easily by people that consider themselves to be nice people, too, by the way. I think the dilemma for us in our time is that most of us are insecure. We value our security over the truth. And I think it's understandable to a degree. Most of us are easily appeased by a very basic middle-class package of house, car, money to raise a family, health insurance. These are not bad things, but when we allow ourselves to really destroy any truth in our idealism to the point, for example, of the sleeping ban, we need to look at what we're doing. We are looking so grossly the other way that we are simply allowing our society to corrupt from within and without.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think there's a kind of the reason we have this profound materialism in our society is because, and I guess it feeds on itself too, but when you fail to have the kind of profound spiritual and emotional connections with other people that might be there, whether they're there in other societies, but that are not present in our society very much, you want some kind of substitution, something to fill the emptiness. And there's a really a massive amount of alienation and isolation that's happening in today's society, where people, you know, they want to feel good, they want to feel that real things are happening around them, that people really care about them, that they really care about others, but they don't want to. They're in the midst of a really horrible economic system in which they don't get paid what they're worth, they don't do what they enjoy. They scramble just to be able to, you know, have a wretched bit of place to stay, and they're in the middle of a situation where now we're asking them to go out and engage in political activism to deal with police misconduct when they're just struggling with two jobs to try to, you know, hold hearth and home together. I mean, it's a really difficult scene, and I don't know what the answer is.
Well, I don't really buy the argument about how people are so busy. I never have, because if that were true, there would be an explosion in political interest upon retirement, and there isn't.
Mm.
There's simply a change in the keeping busy practices, in the way that we keep busy. So we move on from a job and a commute to work to playing golf and going on cruises. Not that those things are bad.
But if we so deny our role in society, we're always out of the loop, it's not my fault, and who are you going to replace him with? And we're all familiar with these one-liners, which are essentially there to disempower the individual, right? The fact of the matter is that if anybody has power, it's the individual. And in the final analysis, the power lies with the people. The reason why these issues like the sleeping ban are so difficult to deal with is that the log jams that prevent the so-called leadership from above board endorsing the issues, because what it represents is that the leadership, quote-unquote, is afraid they're going to lose their positions of petty power. So I think what happens, to not be so long-winded, is that for the most part, the establishment is literally paid to look the other way. Mm-hmm. And the rest of the people know that if you do stick your neck out, it's liable to jeopardize your security. So what you have is you have a society that is terrorized into taking consumerism over right livelihood and conscious living. For example, the fact that we can so wantonly exploit, and I use the word selectively exploit, labor. Anyone that looks at what we're doing with China now and their relationship with American consumerism and Chinese labor, let's look at that above board. It's high time this stuff became above board.
Right.
I'm amazed and appalled that our generation would allow this to happen to the degree that it's happening, and that it's getting, in many ways, worse. We are selecting security over accountability and responsibility and all those things. So it's incredible.
Oh, thank you, Bob.
You bet.
Well, yeah, that's a mouthful. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, and our phone number is 423-5361 if you want to call in and join this discussion. Tonight, I'd like you to know that Sister Spit is going to be up at UCSC Kresge Town Hall for a $5 donation, and no one will be turned away. 8 o'clock, that's Thursday night, tonight, May 14th. Check her out, Sister Spit. Probably worth a spit. There's a No on Proposition 227 rally, candlelight rally at 6:30 tomorrow night in San Jose at the Washington School, Oak and First Street at Cesar Chavez Plaza, with Loris Huerta, Alfredo Schiffini, and more activists and speakers. For information and rides, give a call to 294-8198. And Free Radio Santa Cruz itself wants you to bring all your sellable junk down. We need to have your help at the Saturday Sunday flea market coming up this weekend. And if you got some sellable junk, whatever it is, give us a phone call on the voicemail at 427-4523. That's 427-4523. We need anything you got to help us raise the rent here. We have an exorbitant landlord who's squeezing our butts to death, and we need to find a better place to be. And we need some support. If you like what you hear on the radio, if you like the opportunity to be able to call in, then show it. Give us some of the stuff you don't want, can't use. Give us a call at 427-4523. Tell us where to pick it up. We'll pick it up. We'll sell it. And then we'll use the money to give to some landlord. Whoa, what an idea. But in any case, we'll keep broadcasting. And if you want to join the show and talk about the issues we're talking about here on Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides, that's my show here, every Thursday night from 6 to 8, you can do so right now at 423-5361. Lines are open, 423-5361. Well, before the last caller called in, I was talking about police review, and I was talking about police misconduct. I kind of wanted to follow up on stuff I'd talked about a week or two ago around police misconduct. And there's not a lot new to say, but there's been some public posturing in the papers that I think calls for a little exposure here. You may have noticed the Police Review Board had its Monday night meeting. For the first time in a number of months, I didn't go to the Police Review Board meeting. I made a conscious choice not to, and part of that choice springs from what happened to me at the previous meeting. and I talked about that on the air at some length for those of you who are listening. They essentially threatened me with arrest, censored me, and treated me rather nastily, which is nothing new, I mean, in terms of how committees and public bodies can treat critics. And it's not really a reason to avoid those meetings, but it's rather a reason, you know, not to be discouraged and to go back right, you know, and speak even more loudly. If you feel there's some point in it, if somebody is listening, if not, if you're just flapping your gums, then perhaps there's something else you can do. What I did was I started moving my fingers instead, and I wrote him a letter, and this was the letter I wrote. I wrote, "I will not be attending today's board meeting at your April 13th monthly hearing. Your board chair interrupted me repeatedly during the comment on the agenda item dealing with automatic review of police shootings. The Police Officers Association representative, Barbara Williams, spoke off-topic for more than 5 minutes, more than 6 minutes actually, including the friendly dialogue with the board, and was received most cordially. When I attempted to respond to Williams' all-around-the-map pro-police comments, I was attacked. When I asked a question for clarification, I was told I was, quote, engaged in dialogue with the board. When I attempted to continue speaking, I was told to sit down, even though I'd spoken for less than 2 minutes, and threatened with removal and arrest should I resist. When I attempted to bring this matter to the board's attention through your staff member, I was told to write a letter and hung up on. I suggest you review the audio tapes of the April 13th board meeting if you have any questions about the accuracy of my account. While I'm used to abusive behavior from the City Council and occasionally the Police Department, your board has in the past shown courtesy and respect in taking public input from a few of us who came to your meetings. Of course, they've also ignored our public input, but enough of that. It also seems clear to me that this kind of treatment violates both basic constitutional rights to free speech and equal treatment, as well as the Brown Act. While I understand my communication was critical of the board, it was clearly within the proper bounds of public comment, the reason why the public is supposedly invited to these meetings. That you choose to treat a police officer's rep with more regard than a critic is the board's affair, but when you threaten the critic with arrest and allow the cop to go on beyond 5 minutes and have dialogue with the board, your actions are clearly improper and unfair. More important in my individual case is the effect this kind of treatment has on the public generally. If one has to risk arrest to exercise one's free speech rights at your board meeting, it will tend to discourage all but the most bold. I formally request you apologize to me and the public for repeatedly interrupting me, treating me selectively, and threatening me with arrest for simply exercising well-recognized rights and following agreed-upon protocol. I understand that in the heat of argument over controversial issues, tempers flare, but in the public, that the public must be assured it will not suffer for trying to voice its opinion at public hearings. Sincerely, Robert Norris. This is to the Citizens Police Review Board, and copies of it are to be sent to Celia Scott, John Malkin, Berkeley Cop Watch, Berkeley Police Review Commission, and attorney Kate Wells, who I believe is also sending a letter separately. That was my personal letter, which I actually have not yet sent. I'm going to send it once a letter is sent by attorney Kate Wells about the issue at the same time. I think it's important the board see that it can't get away with the kinds of threats that really shut people up. I also sent them a letter regarding their police automatic review of shootings statement. Now, we've talked about this, and you've read about it probably in the Sentinel, if you're a Sentinel reader, that the board has proposed automatic review of police shootings, not just when complaints are filed, but whenever there's a police shooting, there'll be an automatic review. It sounds pretty good, you know, but I've talked about this before, and what this really is smoke and mirrors. Because if the board wants a review of a shooting, all they have to do is see that a complaint is filed, and that they can get a review of the shooting. What does a review of the shooting mean? It doesn't mean what it sounds like, an investigation of the shooting independent of the police department. No. It means that through the usual process of a complaint to the police department, the police department's internal affairs department will investigate the complaint, and then they will send that complaint out to the Police Review Commission with its decision. I mean, to the Citizens Police Review Board, with a decision. And the board will then meet behind closed doors without having any public hearings, without having an independent investigation, without telling anybody what they're doing, without revealing to anybody what's going on except their eventual verdict. They will look at the reports that the police department has made of the situation, and then they will decide if the reports, what they think, based simply on the police reports. So the review has nothing to do with an independent review. It's a complete following of a discredited process that they already have. Why then are they asking, making such a big deal of making a public request for this process when they already have it? Well, it seems to me that what they want to do is they want to make sure that whenever there is a shooting, there is an automatic procedure for making sure that there is an internal affairs investigation in the police department without somebody having to file a complaint. Because they are so afraid of offending the police chief and the police department by suggesting that some police officer may have acted precipitously that they don't want to put pen to paper themselves and say, we complain about this policy, excessive use of force possibly being violated by officers A, B, and C. They don't have to, you know, accuse the officers of doing so with any certainty. They can say they simply want it investigated to be sure it didn't happen. But they don't even want to do that because that would possibly embarrass the officers. That would put them in a position where they're embarrassing themselves in front of the chief. So they want the city council to set up a new law that will have this thing happen automatically without their even filing a complaint. It's a complete waste of time because, of course, the only thing that's going to happen is in any situation where there's a serious shooting, you're probably going to get a complaint anyway. And the complaint will go through. There'll be the same investigation. And then the board will meet secretly, or behind closed doors, if you will. It's not secret, but it's just secret from all of us. We don't know what they see. We don't know what they say. All we know is if they sustain the complaint or not. So it's really a public relations maneuver based on the anger that the public felt after the results of the Happy John Dine shooting. When, as those of you who've followed this case know, the police review board refused to hold an early investigation. That's a procedure they have. They have it now. They don't have to get a new law. They can actually say, we don't care what the internal affairs of the police department is doing at this time. We're going to investigate now, before that process happens. They could have done that at any time during the Happy John Dine shooting. They could have done that at any time during the Brian Andrews shooting. They can do that at any time during any subsequent shooting. They can declare an early investigation. They never have. Okay? So they do have a process in which they can do it. Now, it's true, it's a little unclear to me whether they need to go through the city manager to get that funded or whether they simply, you know, have to use their own resources to do it. I know they have to go through the city manager if they want an independent investigation after the Internal Affairs Department has done its thing. In the police department, after the police department has done its own investigation, they have to ask for an independent investigation through the city manager. But as I've said before, when this came up in the John Dine shooting, when this came up, and I'm not sure about the Brian Andrews shooting, what the city council said here, but the city council was willing to fund this because it was so controversial and serious a shooting that they wanted an independent investigation. Of course, not enough to mandate it themselves as a city council, but they were willing to support the board. And the board, under the leadership of the conservative Bill Christie, who is a nice enough guy and speaks up for skateboarders, but unfortunately doesn't seem to have any real conception of what his job is, which is to keep an independent eye on the police department. And when there is a serious case, to do an independent investigation. You know, that's apparently not, that's not within his realm of understanding, nor, I've got to say, anybody else on that board. Nobody called for an independent investigation in the Happy John Dine shooting, in spite of the incredible contradictions in the testimony about the shooting of John Dine. So, rather than go through that whole case at great length, which we've already done, I'm just trying to point out that this latest call by the Citizens Police Review Board for an automatic review of police shootings is hogwash. They already have the power to ask for an investigation. They already have the power to file a complaint, which will give them an automatic review of any police shootings. This is a face-saving gesture that tries to create an issue where there is no issue so that people can think they're doing something when they're doing absolutely nothing. And what they're doing is, of course, they're driving away interested people. But there are people still interested in this last shooting, the Brian Andrews shooting, and the Brian Andrews case is going to court. The arraignment was last week. As I said, Linda Andrews was in court today with attorney John Thornton. We haven't heard much from them, and hopefully we will hear more. And the the case is far from over. Hopefully, you know, we're going to be getting some more specifics on it. Their complaints have been refiled with the Police Review Board, not just the complaints of two individuals who didn't see the thing, but who based on what they heard from different sources, were shocked at what happened and felt that the police acted inappropriately. That was Doug McGrath and Marilyn Weaver, but also Cherie Peterson, the neighbor across the street who actually witnessed the shooting, filed her complaint, and her husband, I believe, is due to file a complaint soon. He works all over the hill in Palo Alto, and so he has to kind of requisition his time. Plus, I believe their family was involved in a serious accident and is taking up a lot of time with a kind of a family crisis. I did write a letter to the Citizens Police Review Board on the same day that I composed this letter about why I personally felt it really wasn't worth my time to go to their meetings and get kicked around there. I wrote a letter about the issues about the automatic review shootings. But before I go into that, let's take this next call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Sure. Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Well, I heard a rumor that you had some questions for me.
Ah, you know, I think I recognize this. Is this the redoubtable Richard Quigley?
Well, I'm not sure about the description, but the rest of it follows. What is that word, redoubtable?
Redoubtable, yes.
I need to look that up.
And formidable as well, I might add.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I've been talking on the air, Richard, about the Citizens Police Review Board, but I'm going to kind of shift gears now that I've got you here.
Really?
Sure.
Well, don't lose your audience, but go ahead.
Well, I wish I had an audience, but let's hope I do have an audience.
Okay.
And I don't think we're going to lose the audience here. You're a man who has crossed swords with different forms of authority in the last decade when I've known.